Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Women to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. I'm so excited for my guest this week. Her name is Betsy Foray, and Betsy is the founding partner of Velveteen Ventures, which is an investment firm that invests solely with Native Americans who are founders and entrepreneurs, and specifically in the area of children and climate. She has an incredible story as the very first Native American woman to receive a Series A investment herself. Before we get started, be sure to stay with us during the breaks where you'll hear from our exclusive watch team of corporate partners. And as always, we'd love for you to subscribe to our YouTube channel at W2W Media. So now I'm very honored and excited to welcome to the show Betsy Foray. Betsy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Susan. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
It's great to have you, and I'm so excited to kind of catch up and dive in with you in this interview. So much about your career and what you have done, both personally and professionally, is so impressive to me. But as we always do, I want to give our audience a sense of where you came from and what kind of inspired you to get into the work that you're doing. So I'd love for you to just talk a little bit about the small town you grew up in Illinois, just to kind of describe that community.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a very small village, I believe it's called. Yeah, it was so, so tiny, little country town. And I love my upbringing. I grew up in the, on a ranch in the middle of the countryside, going between there and then where my mom was born and raised, on the Turtle Mountain Chippewa Reservation in North Dakota on the Canadian border. So I'm Native American, and I would grow up going back and forth between these two worlds of like very rural countryside, and more of an industrial farming town. And then the 17-hour drive that we took every year, multiple times, right, to go up to the res and visit family and powwow. And yeah, it was a magical upbringing, having not visited my first city till I was a teenager when I came to Chicago. And now I'm back there full circle. So
I can't imagine seeing that, a city for the first time at 17.
Oh my goodness. It was so magical. It was, it felt like, it felt like kind of how it feels today to me, really. It's still a fairy tale, right? Like the architecture, the food, the beach, you know, the energy, the heartbeat of the city. I mean, since then I've lived in London and New York as well. And so it's been just beyond my wildest dreams, right? Being that little country girl, exploring the world in this way. I've had such an incredible journey, and I would say my upbringing, it really inspired everything I do. All my companies were inspired by my family, by my children. My first company was inspired by my dog. And now my nonprofit I run is inspired by my Native community as well, and relatives. So yeah, I'm happy to dive into that a bit more with you.
Yeah, you shared with me, which I think is so it's a wonderful ambition and goal to want to create generational wealth, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to talk about your visits to the reservation and describe what that was like there and what you saw and how that really impacted your ambition to want to become an entrepreneur and create wealth and a life for yourself.
Absolutely. So I'm the first person in my family to go to college. I saw the work ethic of my relatives, right? That you work hard for what you want in life. You know, when I was growing up, I didn't know any different. I thought this is normal, right? You go and visit, and you see a different way of people living, right? You know, most, Native communities are very poverty stricken. And so we're, you know, my reservation has a big casino on it, but when you grow up, I think in a rural town, you kind of don't understand that this isn't the norm, right? When I first went to a city, I was just like absolutely enamored, like, you know, with everything around. You don't realize that as a child. And I think it's such a blessing, but, you know, it just feels like this is family and this is the way of life. I do vividly remember though, my uncle's store, he still to this day has, his own company, called Azure's Auto Body, on the res where he, fixes up cars. And I remember thinking, wow, he's created his own destiny in that way, right? Like being an entrepreneur.
Yes.
Off the reservation, my auntie Glendale had also started a garden center. And she's always loved plants. And that was also super inspiring to me, just like charting your own course. So those were the two entrepreneurs that I saw growing up. And I think I didn't realize it was a path for myself until, well, maybe it was earlier, but I was always tinkering in the garage with my dad building motorcycles growing up. He's a motocross racer. He was a dirt bike racer at that time. Now races a lot of motocross. And he actually, yeah, he always has like a dozen motorbikes in the garage. And so for me, it was always like, okay, I could go out there and I could build something. It's actually what inspired me to become an industrial designer. It felt like I could build something out of nothing. And that's really what founders are trying to do, you know, day in and day out. So I think that was really the spark as well that kind of got me going down this road, and then realizing just, you know, I think it's such a blessing when you feel like, what have I got to lose, right? When you put yourself out there and you try to make these big moves. As we go through my entrepreneurial journey, you'll hear a bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, one of my questions was about what, you know, inspired you to pursue industrial design. And if I recall, are you the only daughter in the family? You have brothers?
Yes. Yes, I have one younger brother.
Yeah. And but your father in particular and your mom and dad treated you all equally. They
did
not treat you different because you were a girl.
Exactly. That's right. And I think that made a massive difference in how I'm trying to raise my children as well, where they're treated equally, where the girl is also able to, you know, take the same amount of risk and fail. One thing I love to ask my kids around the dinner table is, what did you fail at today? Right. That's what builds kind of the mindset that you need going out into the world, right. That you've kind of learned and honed in on that over time. I think, when I was growing up, yeah, my dad, I was always in the garage with him. My brother's actually an illustrator. And they just allowed us to be creative in our own way, whatever we wanted to pursue, but they treated us both the same. And I think that made a world of a difference. Yeah.
What did your family on the reservation do for a living other than your uncle who had the automotive?
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know if we want to edit this part out or not. I guess I've never been asked that before, but I think that my aunties and uncles and everyone, my cousins, they all still live there. It is difficult, on the reservation to find work. I think, you know, that was, we were brought to kind of the worst possible land, right? That was like, I'm from one of the most densely populated reservations as well. So, you know, there, it really lacked for opportunities. And so I think that was so much of the, what got me so excited about when I realized, like, wait a minute, there is this opportunity where I could give back and the opportunities that I've had in life, right? By learning about venture capital, by learning how to be a founder, then I could try to help others, right, to do that as well. So I think that was really the impetus of my nonprofit, Natives Rising, which we can talk more about. But yeah, no one, when it comes to entrepreneur endeavors, though, it was mainly, yeah, my Uncle Stuart and my Auntie Glendale that really inspired that thread. Yeah.
Yeah. Was there anyone outside of your family, particularly in school, mm-hmm. that knew your background story and where you came from and kind of saw your potential and your ambitions and you would consider a mentor, someone that kind of helped you understand that there were opportunities for you that are so much different from where your family came from?
Yeah, I think that's what's so beautiful about growing up in middle America is that I felt I was in the same boat as everyone else, right? You didn't really think about money growing up, right? You were fed, you had a roof over your head, you were happy. I don't think, for me, what the mentors that really kicked in on the business side were when I actually started going out and getting going with my career, right? The people I looked up to the most and my elders growing up were my grandma, who I talk about a lot in my book, actually, as being such an inspiring woman and trailblazer in her own right. And I think, you know, the way that my mom has lived her life and my dad, like one of the hardest workers I've ever known, I think my family inspired me so much that, I don't know if I couldn't pin it on in terms of the childhood years. Someone outside of that, right? But I never.
Well, that was. It sounds like it was innate in you. It was an aspiration you seemed to have.
Yes.
From a young age that developed, obviously, over time.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
There was someone I believe that you met that was an exciting experience for you, Michael Acton Smith.
Yes, that was as I got going on my career. Absolutely. And he is a dear mentor to this day. We actually he's included in my book that's coming out later this year as well. But he's the founder of Calm, the meditation app. And previously he had built a company when I'd first met him in London called Mind Candy. It was developing for children, a virtual world of Mashi monsters. And that was kind of like the Pokemon of the UK at the time. It was so thrilling because to kind of take you through it. So I wound up becoming a toy inventor after university, which I thought, oh my goodness, this is a dream job. It can't get better than this. And that was in Chicago, right? For Mattel and Hasbro and Spin Master and so forth. And then I wound up wanting to live in Europe, my husband being European and us being able to have the opportunity to move to London, I thought, oh my goodness, let me look into the market here because, of course, growing up, I never traveled abroad, right? The furthest we went was Estes Park, Colorado, for a family vacation. And so I was like, what is this magical place, right? London, which it is, it's absolute magic, you know. But I think, you know, when I looked into it and researched what was happening in the toy space at the time, I found this digital kids brand and I saw the brand looked great. Like it was in the very early stages. But when I heard Michael speak, that's when I knew, oh my goodness, anything he touches is gold. I would love to figure out how I can turn his digital world into a physical franchise. And so I flew out not knowing anyone and for a straight month kept walking in actually five times to meet with Michael. And by the fifth time we sat down, chatted for over 2 hours. He hired me on the spot. I mean, the rest is kind of history.
Wow.
All a product there. So we were one of a few people and then grew the company to over 300 people, over 80 million registered users online with the product as well. And we became the number one toy brand in all of UK, beating even Lego and Star Wars. So it was just an absolute dream. But of course, during that time, I was learning so much, right? Coming from more of like the industrial design, like the physical build of the thing into a totally digital startup that was like tech and trying to run product and figure it all out. I think, I wasn't able to get my hands as dirty at that point, right? Like to be able to be hands-on with the build. And so I wound up doing hackathons on the weekends. And one weekend, I invented the first Fitbit for dogs for my dog, Whiskey. There wasn't one on the market at the time. This was when he was 1 year old. So he's now 14. So this was quite a while ago, but that wound up becoming my first company. And I shared that with Michael and said, you know, half of dogs in UK and US are considered to be overweight or obese, resulting in decreased life expectancy. And I wanted to go out and do this as a full-time founder, you know, CEO and figure it out. And that journey was all in probably close to 7 years of launching initially at Harrods in London, and then Colette for Paris Fashion Week. And then I wound up living in New York after that, running kind of the sales process through all the main retailers of, you know, every Best Buy in North America. We got Oprah's Favorite Things list, which was such a dream come true. And we were in Bloomingdale's, we were in every Urban Outfitters, every Petco on end cap, launching the pet tech category. And it was the cutest little bow tie design that we had patented as well. But again, I didn't know anything about hardware. It was just like a girl with a dog and a dream at that point, right? And
or how to start a business or run a business.
Yes, exactly.
As you're talking and describing this journey, I keep thinking to myself, you seem to have this, what's the worst that can happen mentality.
It's like, why not me, right? Like that was what I kept thinking throughout every step of the process, because, you know, you can get really discouraged thinking, wow, I don't know anything about this, right? Like, how am I going to figure it out? How are people going to take a chance on me, right, to figure it out? And that's just been Michael is absolutely such an inspiration in my life. And I think, you know, the fact that he's helped so many millions of people now, you know, through Calm as well, is just testament to him and like his, you know, deep, what I call a deep inner why, and that values that kind of, you know, transcend whatever career you're in at the time.
Yeah, he's it's an incredible app. Would you say, you know, you're an engineer at heart, or are you more of a big thinker, idea person, or are you gifted in both areas, do you think?
I think I have to be a bit gifted in both areas. I am definitely the big ideas, but I always want to figure out how do I build it, right? I'm very much a doer.
That's unusual, I think, you know, in all the years I've been interviewing women, it's rare, I think, to be gifted equally in both of those areas.
I don't know. I mean, this kind of comes back to my dad, but he's always had these big ideas of things that he could build. A lot of times it was like eclectic motorcycles, right? Like in the garage, and he did it and he built them. And even if it didn't work at first, he would do it again. And I just think seeing that growing up, it really leaves an impression on you, right? That you know what, I can do it too. And I'm going to build something. And, the real secret is that you get everyone around you, right, that also believes in this vision, and it becomes their vision as well. That's what makes it great. It's not that initial prototype or, you know, MVP that you created, that minimal viable product. It's the grand vision that then is shared, right, that then folks can bring their talents on board and really help bring it to fruition.
Right. Okay. So then what was your next company? Because if I'm correct, there were three, you know, before Velveteen Ventures.
Exactly. I know there's been so many, but I feel like I'm in the second half of my career now, second half of my life. So I'm excited to, be able to give back. The company, so essentially after Wonder Woof, I then founded for my first son, who wasn't born yet, I was pregnant with at the time, Sebastian. I thought to myself, what could I give Sebi? At the time, you know, I was like, what could I give my son that would really enrich his life? Of course, I knew a mother's love, right? But then for myself and my own background and perspective, I thought it's probably a love of vegetables, of whole foods from the very first bites that could prolong his life as well.
Set him on the right track.
And you know, I think the American food system, but absolutely on the reservation as well. When you're like my mom and my relatives who grew up with commodities, it was the worst possible type of food, right? It was literally lard. And so you think, and my mom didn't even have real milk, right, as a child. And so I think that when you look at a child's upbringing, I started diving all into the research. And of course, now as a third time mom, I've kind of, you know, I've gotten really, really, you know, interested and so keen on this. But there's a window between the age of 4 to 6 months called the flavor window that a person actually is more keen to try new flavors than they ever will be their whole life. And I thought maybe instead of giving them a palate towards sweet things like we do with the sugary purees that are fruit, right? Maybe we could give them a palate that they would prefer vegetables instead. And so
That's so brilliant.
Yeah, that was the dream, and we actually achieved that. And so my son grew up, all my kids grew up on Tiny Organics, and you know, I grew that company in the first 24 months to over $13 million in revenue just on direct sales alone. So this was before we went into retail, and then I was able to close our Series A financing round, and that's when my relatives and community and friends reached out and said, we think you're the first Native American, right, to do this thing. And I was like, wow. Oh my goodness, I have to make sure there are many, many more, right, Native founders to come. And so that was really the spark for my nonprofit that I founded whilst remaining on the board of course, Tiny, that I had founded previously. But I went off to found Natives Rising with a phenomenal co-founder, Danielle Forward, who's Pomo. So her homelands, her tribal lands are actually SF. And she was at Facebook building out for like the indigenous tech community, a platform that they could go to connect, to support one another. And then I said, you know, we met at an MIT Indigenous Women in STEM event. And I said, I fangirled her for years because in Indian country, she's a bit of a legend, but we solidified the partnership at Powwow. This was now several years back, where I said, you know, what you're doing for Native technologists, I want to do for Native founders, and for us to build a community to support one another, but also to give the $50K grant like I got for my first company. So we kind of fast-tracked through Wonder Woof there from the Mind Candy days, but the first check I ever got, right, in terms of starting a business or even knowing how, it was a grant, right, a $50K grant. And so I think, could I then give that to other Native founders to be able to go on to raise, you know, millions if that's what they choose, or to be able to build the company of their dreams? And then what I'd wound up doing was, what I did was reached out to every Native founder who had either raised more than $1 million or done more than $1 million in revenue for their companies, to then get to mentor the next cohorts of Native founders and for them to be able to deploy those grants. And so that's just been such a labor of love. I'm able to work with obviously so many close friends as well in doing this work. And as I was building out my nonprofit, it became very clear, and I had been investing for several years out of two different funds. One was X Factor Ventures, part of Flybridge out of Boston. And we actually have written over 100 checks into female-founded companies and counting. We're on our third fund, but there's 23 of us female founders who are Series A and beyond that then back that next generation of female founders. And so that's just been such a great learning curve for me over those few years prior to founding my firm. And that kind of leads us up to today, Velveteen Ventures. So my firm was actually named after the Velveteen Rabbit that my grandmother gave me when I was about 4 or 5 years old, that she got from Goodwill. And he's actually sitting downstairs right now, and my sons play with him. But you know, the idea is that founders, you know, believe so much, and it becomes real, right? And I think, you know, you can love something enough, you can pour enough love, attention, care into something, and it will become real. So that's sort of the idea around what we're doing at Velveteen, but also that we're investing in solutions for children and for planet. So my partner, she built the Patagonia Home Planet Fund for Yvonne Chouinard. Around her entire background has been in climate. She's an indigenous Alaskan Native woman, Carla Brolier. And so together we've joined forces to really invest in two very indigenous issues, right, where there's almost no Native voices at the table. But our first investment was into a Native founder who created a pediatric telehealth AI platform called Kismet. And so we're so thrilled. And she's also a mentor at Natives Rising as well. But, you know, we're able to tap into and create access for these founders that have not had these opportunities before and yet could be the next billion-dollar company. And so it's really thrilling to get to see that. And yeah, we held our first close the week that my baby girl was born. So this was 12 weeks ago, my third baby was born. And you know,
your life is so boring, Betsy. Yes. There's nothing going on.
I know, it's so much. Yeah.
Listen, hold that thought. We're going to go into a short break. Okay. And then when we come back, I thought maybe you could explain the four C's of Velveteen Ventures to give people a real sense of what your company does and what you're focusing on.
Yes, perfect.
Stay with us as we go into our break. You'll hear from our watch team, and we'll be back with Betsy Foray.
Thank you. Someone had a birthday.
Yep, 50. Can't believe it.
50 years of wisdom.
Great segue. We have health news, a CDC update.
Pneumococcal vaccination is now recommended for adults 50 or older. Says here, we're over 6 times more likely to be hospitalized with pneumococcal pneumonia than adults under 50.
I don't love those odds.
Same. Look what I found. Pfizer's Prevnar 20 is proven to help protect adults against pneumococcal pneumonia and invasive pneumococcal disease in just one dose, and millions have already gotten it.
Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you have a severe allergy to its ingredients. A weakened immune system may lower your response. Common side effects include injection site pain and swelling, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138. Visit Prevnar20.com or talk to your doctor or pharmacist.
I'm on Prevnar20.com now, scheduling my appointment.
Good idea. And happy 50th.
As a female-led organization, you have to bring it every single day. We're a mashup of sort of right and left brain. So we're not just doing management consulting. We're not just doing creative services. We're not just producing an event, but we're bringing a comprehensive solution to our clients. And because of the way we approach it, we end up being bought into what it is that we're doing in a way that we truly have as much skin in the game as our clients do, whether it's bringing affordable internet to communities across the Caribbean, or it's helping Comcast with their Internet Essentials program, which is something we've been very proud to work on, or it's helping the NFL celebrate their centennial season by getting 1 million people to give at least 100 minutes to causes they care about, or helping the city of Philadelphia win the World Cup. So what's next for us? Well, we just hit just over 100 employees. I think we are at that tipping point, and I don't think there's anybody that does it better than we do. I'm Maggie Wilkinson, CEO of Athena Global Advisors, a company that is proudly based in Philadelphia.
Ladies, I'm Tiffany Curtin, a financial professional with more than 25 years of experience serving successful women, families, and businesses. Here's the reality. You don't have to be the one managing your family's finances to take ownership of your future. But if you want true confidence about how everything is going to play out, you do have to take part in the process. That doesn't mean digging into the weeds of your finances when you don't have the time or desire. It means elevating your awareness of your own circumstances. It means having the bigger conversations so you're empowered when you need to be. Let's bring confidence to your family's future without overwhelming your time. Call my cell at 903-520-2709. That's 903-520-2709. Or visit Johnson Financial Group on our website, www.jfg.cc. Not .com, www.jfg.cc.
Hi, I'm Dawn Zier, CEO, board director, and executive mentor to Fortune 500 executives through my work at the EXCO Group, firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior leaders grow. Today on Leadership Watch, we're going to talk about being in the driver's seat of your career. No matter what stage you're at in your career, you need to grasp that you are in the driver's seat. Understanding from day one that you and you alone are responsible for your career is critical. After all, why would you hand your career over to someone else to manage? There's no one as vested in yourself as you. And the ugly truth is that most managers are focused on execution rather than team development. So how can you ensure that your career stays on track? First, make sure you have a clear set of agreed upon goals that are measurable, and if priorities shift, rewrite them with buy-in. Two, if you see something that can be improved upon or automated, don't wait to be asked, just do it. This is good advice for tech-savvy millennials and Gen Zs who can help lead the way with AI. Three, don't insulate yourself. Get to know other parts of the organization and network both internally and externally. Feel free to drive outside of your lane. And four, while your career is yours to own, don't go it alone. Identify sponsors and mentors. Also, it's important to make self-reflection and self-assessment a habit. Think through where you want to be 5 years from now and create a roadmap for yourself. Does your current path get you there? Are you passionate about what you're doing? Do you feel challenged? Are you learning? Do you feel respected? And importantly, are you a cultural fit? And is the company a cultural fit for you? If you answer negative to any of these questions, it's likely time for some course correcting. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, check out excoleadership.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. I'm joined this week by Betsy Foray, and Betsy is the co-founder of Velveteen Ventures. And just before the break, she told us about the title, which I was just going to ask about. I love that. And I understand your focus with your organization is with children and climate. And I wonder if you can talk why those two areas, you know, of all the things that we see needs for, why those two and what the four C's represent when it comes to Velveteen.
Yeah. So at Velveteen, we invest in children and climate because that's really the expertise of myself and Carla. Our, you know, our backgrounds, my whole background has really been focused on children, the children's space, and of course, my last company. So we want to invest in categories that we are just specialists in, right? That we know what works. We've actually built in these categories prior. I mentioned Carla, her incredible background. She has been in climate her entire career. She was also the first person to graduate college from her family. And then she went on to be Al Gore's right hand with his climate reality project for about 6 years. She served in UN with their indigenous issues forum there. And then she stood up seven different climate funds, and the most recent one being the Patagonia Home Planet Fund, where they're giving all their revenue now back to the earth. So there's literally no one else that could have this sort of expertise from the indigenous perspective than Carla. She is a unicorn in that sense. And so and then myself in the children's space, right, and having just built the ecosystem out with all the kind of key partnerships and players. That's what we want to be able to provide access to for our founders that we invest in. But, you know, I mentioned it earlier prior to the break, but these are two very indigenous issues, right, that we feel so strongly about. You know, the other part of our thesis is that we're doing this for the next seven generations. So anything that we put out into the world, we're really, really believing, right, that this can make that change towards climate stability, but then also through like children's mental health, right, like that we could rise up to be a more productive society and happier and just more fulfilled. So that's really what we are building towards.
Yeah. I have a question from one of our followers. Okay. And he asks, how has your Native American heritage influenced your investment strategy? And perhaps you just spoke to that, but if you can elaborate.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and it does, because you know, I think when you know, Carla talks a lot about this too, but when you're investing in people who understand the problem, right, that's what I call a founder fit. So when I'm looking at what founders I want to invest in, it's the ones that have this sort of, they can't not build this company, right? I know it because that's what I have felt as a founder as well, right? This needs to live in the world. And, you know, I'm the person to kind of breathe life into this. I think when you find those type of founders, especially within these two categories that we invest in, and within those, then the four verticals of which you mentioned earlier, our four C's of community, consumer, climate, and healthcare. So we kind of, it's really the care there that we focus on the C. But when we look at these verticals through an indigenous lens, actually the communities that it affects the most, who know the most about these type of problems and issues, are the ones that are the most equipped to solve them, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times. And so I think we are able to view things from such a unique lens that it really does. It changes the way that we invest. And I will say, we're not an impact fund. We're an ROI-driven fund, and we plan on making a massive return for our LPs. But at the same time, we built into the underlying structure of the venture fund itself, that we will be giving back directly to tribes and creating generational wealth with this venture. So I think that it's all in the way that you've, kind of built your company to reflect your values, and in the ways of of our teachings, it really is around the seven grandfather teachings and around the idea that you have, that you bring those to all that your endeavors, but really from a lens of understanding the issues that you're solving.
Yeah. What do you worry about the most as not only a founder in this particular space, where you're seeing significant problems, you know, serious problems that need to be solved, and as a mother?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of keeps you up at night? What do you worry about the most?
Yeah. I would say I'm a problem solver. So for me, I think with all the work I've done, I'm actually a neurolinguistics programming practitioner, so NLP practitioner as well. So I've done a lot of work, so I don't stay up worrying at night. But anyways, I'll just
practice. If you can share that with us. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what my book's about as well, because as a founder, you wind up burning out, right? And when you really assess your life and take stock in what truly matters, and it is your deep inner why, it's those values. And so if you can come back to that kind of heart coherence around it, I wouldn't say much really does keep me up at night. I think more than anything, I see opportunity everywhere I look. I think, you know, right now it's just such a time, just an incredible time to be alive, but also, I'm inspired, right, by the founders that we work with every day. So I think, yeah, in terms of challenges, I do think about the challenges, of course, especially on the boards that I serve on as well, of the companies and how I can best bring them to market, position them, get them connected. And but, you know, because I had been a founder previously and now gone to the investor side, it is a little bit different, because you don't, you know, it's not, that's when I was really staying up at night, right? When it was like, oh my gosh, this is my everything. And how do I get it out there? You know, but it's like, of course I'm still concerned and trying to help, you know, the companies that I work with, but I think it's from a place of abundance, right? Which is a little bit of a different, it's what I'm trying to teach and train like founders how to operate from. And it's difficult to do when you haven't come from that mindset, right? Yeah. And it's really a belief that you can have in yourself.
Yeah. I think we need to bottle up your perspective. Really, I mean, if we could all, you know, most of the time be in that state of hopeful, excited, inspired, what's next, you know, but then life kind of comes in, things that we don't expect, and it changes that. But it seems to me that you're able to kind of go with the flow of that and bounce back quicker. Yes. Tell me real quick about the book.
Yes.
Yeah. And what it's about and why you decided to write a book on top of having a baby. And
well, I've been writing it for 5 years, so it is a labor of love.
You took your time.
Yes. Good. Yes. And you know, because when I first started writing it, I was really just doing it as an exercise for the founders that I work with, for them to be able to have these references of things that I had built and how I did it, right? So that they can try to learn from. And, you know, when I really realized that I need to bring this to the masses was when I had this big unlock in my own life, in the understanding of, yeah, those values that we talk about, right? And how you could make your life sort of, you know, in my mind, the founder life is like, we're the ultimate manifestors. Like we create something out of nothing. What my book is looking to do is really marry that idea of manifesting and like this, essentially this invisible hand that's guiding you and ready to lift you up at any moment, which I call the universe throughout my book. Because what I believe is that, you know, the universe, is saying yes to us. Any energy that we're putting out into the world, it's going to say yes, yes, yes. So why wouldn't we want that to be this energy that is our true selves, right? That is that kind of hopeful, excited, okay, what's next, like you mentioned, right? So the book itself is a business book. So it's coming out with HarperCollins Business in this fall in 2025.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's the title?
The title is The Deep Inner Why of Entrepreneurship. Manifest the business of your dreams.
Okay. I so, can't wait to read it.
Yeah. I interview 18, is it 18 or 19 founders? Over half of them are women and a third of them are Native American. So I'm very thrilled to bring these perspectives. Yeah.
So we share that. So in doing that, I have two questions for you. I love to ask people who also have sat down with others and asked questions. Do you have a favorite question that you like to ask of these founders and entrepreneurs?
Yes.
And any revelations that you were surprised to learn?
Oh, yes, I do. I because I'd been doing so many interviews now over this year that I, you know, I actually honed in on 10 questions that I always ask. And the first one I go out with, which you also asked, was where did you grow up and how did your childhood influence what you're doing today and what you've created? I think that you can unlock so many things and even realizations for the founder themselves, right? By asking that question. And then the last question I ask is how do you view legacy? And in that light, how do you view your legacy? And so when you, part of the last chapter I wrote is on legacy in my book. And it's really about thinking on your deathbed, right? What matters? And then kind of living your life as if, you know, it's almost off of an obituary, right? Like those things that you value. And so I think those two are really kind of big revelation moments for people. And then I talk a lot about what I call product market love, which is my version of product market fit, and ask questions around that too, because everybody that I spoke with built things. Some of the founders have IPO'd their companies. Several of them are unicorns. So they have, you know, billion or multi-billion dollar valuations for their companies. And I think seeing that in light of the different perspectives and backgrounds, right, that they're also bringing to the table, I'm just so excited to bring, yeah, this book to the world.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy for you. That's a big, big accomplishment. And I could talk to you all day. I just love your energy. I appreciate so much you're taking time to be on the show, and we'll stay in touch and let me know when the book is ready to be purchased.
Yes. Yes. Pre-orders will be out in a couple months. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Betsy. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Stay with us as we go into our last break, and I'll be back to close out the show.
Children's Hospital of Philadelphia has long been ranked as one of the best children's hospitals in the country. In our Women to Watch at CHOP series, we'll meet the women working to preserve this best-in-class pediatric innovation. Let's meet Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Sophia Holder. Sophia, just take a minute to kind of introduce yourself to our guests. Tell them a little bit about where you came from and how you ended up in this role.
Yes, and thank you, Susan, for just the amazing work that you do to inspire women leadership. I would still call myself as new to CHOP. Started just over 3 years ago, and I'm honestly in my dream job in an organization that is focused on delivering and innovating care for children. And so it's hard not to find joy in that space. My career in healthcare spans many years, starting in the adult side and now on the pediatric side. And I'm just really thrilled to be with you today.
What advice would you have for our listeners and our viewers listening to you today?
So I would offer two pieces of advice. Focus on continuous learning. Be a life learner. That's the frame that I often use with those who work with me and for me. Stay updated on industry trends. Continuously seek opportunities for learning and growth. Knowledge is power in any leadership role. I think the other piece of advice I would give is model authenticity. Be authentic and true to yourself. Authentic leadership builds trust and loyalty among your team and your peers, foundational to building effective teams and supporting cross-collaboration and partnership.
Thanks so much to Sophia Holder for joining us. Stay tuned for more Women to Watch at CHOP.
We are CHOP, and we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. 3 state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level one trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first of its kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. We are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thanks so much for being with me. Next week, I'll be speaking with Shuri Race, and Shuri is the founder of a company called Anthea. And Anthea is a safe and affordable psychedelic therapy, a company that Shuri founded based on her own personal life experience. Thank you, as always, to our sponsors and corporate partners for helping us to bring you the show each and every week. By the way, if you're interested in becoming a part of the show, we would love to have you reach out. You can speak to me directly at susan@womentowatch.net.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.